what they know about them Texas boys.
You're listening to the most dangerous show in Texas, Fight Night on 104.9 The Horn.
Wherever you are, however you may be listening, it is now Fight Night. Welcome to Fight Night on 104.9 The Horn and hornfm.com, the only show in town Joe Rogan hasn't been on. I'm your host, Eddie Cross. You can find me on Twitter at EddieExperience, one E in the middle. And with me, as always, the man currently modeling his hair after Stipe Miocic, Mr. Jordan Wahlberger. Jordan, what is that, like a kind of a funky chicken type of thing that was going on Saturday, and now you've got it now after water polo? Is that what it is?
That's, you know, it's a style, Eddie. You know, you wouldn't know. I don't know if you guys see. Eddie. Eddie is bald as it gets. And but yeah, it's a style, right? No, it's actually, no, it's just chlorine. Can't do much about it. Eddie, it is great to see you, my friend. Guys, you can find us at Fight Night ATX on Twitter, on Instagram, on Facebook. Eddie, I'm feeling good. I told you I played water polo tonight. I was definitely a little sluggish. Let's be honest. Someone said, you look a little out of shape. And that's probably true. I am a little bit out of shape. I haven't done anything really in the whole month of March. And so it was nice to get back in there to exercise. And yeah, I'm tired though.
Yeah, I thought about doing some exercising today, and then work just kept me busy all day. So then I just said, forget it. I'm going to lay on the couch for a while.
Well, good. Eddie, what is new with you, my friend?
I'm going to go with a little therapy right here.
Okay, I like it.
That ice storm in February, it really got to me.
Yeah.
I think I've turned into a prepper.
Well, Eddie, it's about time. I've been waiting for you to prepare to like do this show every single week, so it's great to finally hear that you've actually prepared.
All right, Mr. Water Polo.
Wait, what?
Mr. Water Polo, Mr. I got to get the kids to bed. Don't talk to me about getting ready for the show.
Wait, what are you talking about? You finally did some preparation for the show?
I'm talking about, got myself a little solar panel.
Okay.
Portable power station. Lots of extra lights and power banks for the phones and electronics. Nice little space heater and a fan. I know it'll be a while before another freeze like that, but after last week's hailstorm, who knows when the power's going to go out again. So I am ready, my friend.
Wasn't that the issue, though, that the solar-powered wind turbines didn't work because there was no sun?
Maybe.
You need a generator.
It's part of the issue. I got one. Right. Portable power bank.
All right. I like it. Well, that's now, good. Eddie, I have been...
Backup is solar.
I'm not saying I'm like a doomsday prepper, but I will tell you, if you need food, Eddie, during something happens, just come on over. We've got food storage galore in this house. We've got water. We've got food, flour. So much that my wife is like, I don't even want to make anything. We almost at one point during this last storm was like, well, let's break out the food storage. We didn't have milk. I was like, well, let's break out some powdered milk. She's like, that sounds disgusting. I still don't want to use that. So
you've got powdered milk.
We still wouldn't even use that when we were in a place where we couldn't go to the grocery store.
Hey, just tell me, are there juice boxes?
There are no juice boxes. No, Eddie, no, we don't have that. We have water bottles, a lot of water and barrels. We have a water barrel.
This is a water barrel.
A barrel, like a 25 gallon barrel.
Wow. I did not see that one coming.
You got to be prepared, Eddie.
Yeah, you do. Yes, you do.
So
it also helps to live near a hospital or a fire station.
Yeah, there you go. Eddie, I spent the weekend watching Mighty Ducks, the series, all three of them. So there's a new show on Disney Plus. So we were going to watch that, and my kids were like, we haven't seen 2 and 3. And I said, well, wait a minute. We need to watch all three Mighty Ducks right now. And, you know, love the Knuckle Puck. Love Adam Banks, obviously the best
excuse
player.
Excuse me, what did you just say?
The Knuckle Puck, obviously. Kenan Thompson's Knuckle
Puck
in D2. Adam Banks, obviously the best duck around. But I got to, you know, going back, I got to think
I
that...
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Do you not know about the Mighty Ducks?
I know about them. I've never watched them.
Do you know what the Knuckle Puck is?
No. So all I'm right. Like, watch your language, buddy.
You have a job to do, Eddie. You've got to go watch the Mighty Ducks. They were on ESPN Plus over the weekend as well.
Yeah, no, I don't.
Oh, man, you are missing out. Go find a niece of yours and go watch the Mighty Ducks.
Tell you what, I'll watch the Mighty Ducks when you watch the 311 Mardi Gras show.
Ooh, yuck. That's not the same levels. Well, Eddie, before we get into UFC 260, we've got to congratulate the Texas women's basketball team onto the Elite Eight, defeating Maryland.
Oh, my goodness.
Congratulations to them.
No kidding. Making us all proud. First-year coach Vic Schaefer taking them to the Elite Eight. I mean, beat the number two team in the country. I mean, that's amazing.
I was always
all in for watching this next game.
I really liked Brad Kellner from the Horns tweet about saying that I thought it took years for to go to the Sweet 16 or the Elite Eight. So, well, Eddie.
Well, we'll see what happens with our new men's coach once that happens.
All right. Well, let's talk UFC 260. Eddie, we have a brand new heavyweight champion of the world. Francis Ngannou defeats Stipe Miocic by second round KO. Francis was patient in this fight, much different than the first time that they fought back in 2018, where he just kind of just, you know, gassed himself out after trying to go for that knockout so early. It was a great finish, a great fight for Francis Ngannou, and it showed that how much he's changed over the last few years.
It really has. We were really hoping to see, like, not that we were picking one, hoping for one side or the other, but just hoping to see improvement in Francis, to see, you know, just not a bad fight, first off, but to see the potential that he has be realized. And let me tell you now, Patient Francis has surpassed C-level Kane, TRT Vitor, pre-diverticulitis Brock Lesnar.
Brock Cruz, yeah.
Healthy Dominic Cruz, and motivated BJ Penn in levels of scariness.
Well, I think the scariest Patient part Francis. For me was when Stipe Miocic goes for the takedown in the single leg in the first round. Francis stuffs the head and then takes his back, blocks the takedown, and then goes to the back, lands bombs from the back. Then you knew you were in for a problem right there. If he's able to now add wrestling to the mix, that's a problem for everybody in the division.
And after that, he even attempted some offensive wrestling. And I'm sitting there going, no, what are you doing? I had flashbacks to Rumble versus DC. I'm like, dude, just get up and punch him again. Don't wrestle. He figured that one out pretty quick, too.
It was impressive, right? And it was a great first round for Francis Ngannou. Stipe Miocic in the corner, like the feedback was, hey, you need to kind of do something, right? Like, you need to get it going. So the second round, Francis lands a shot. He drops Stipe, followed by, I don't think we're talking about those shots that he dropped. I mean, those shots were flush as he dropped him into the cage and then followed up, like, you know, landing those shots as Stipe tried to get back up. Stipe's able to land a shot of his own, but then Francis comes in, finishes with the left hook, and then drops that bomb on the ground, which probably didn't need to happen, but we're not going to blame Francis or really anybody, right, for that. I mean, he wanted to make sure that he put that exclamation point on the finish there.
No, we had seen just a little earlier, and we'll get to this in a second, but what happens when you don't get the go for the finish like Sean O'Malley when you think you've got the walk-off? No, you finish him. You make the referee dive in and put his life on the line to stop that next shot. And, man, Herb Dean, he was it's like after Francis got that, Stipe got that one good shot in on Francis, it kind of stood him up for a second. Herb Dean took a step back, and then Francis gets that left hook. So Herb Dean is already stepping backwards when that shot happens. So he's got to, like, reverse his momentum and start sprinting across the cage. Felt sorry for him because you're trying to stop a death right then.
Yeah. You got to feel good about it when you saw those videos of the people in Cameroon celebrating that win with Francis. But you've got to think about, like, those last five fights that we've seen Francis in and just how quickly now, including the Stipe fight, right, how those fights have gone. And you were thinking about that. What if that happened, and what if he does that in the next few fights as he's defending a title? That's like Ronda Rousey level, like, title fights where he just fights those, finishes those fights so emphatically. What is the ceiling right now for Francis' stardom?
The sky's the limit, man. I mean, how many other fighters can bring together three continents? You know, he's fighting out of Vegas. He's from Cameroon in Africa. He lived in France or grew up there. Speaks French. So, I mean, he could be, that's Connor level big. Luckily he doesn't talk as much crap, so that makes me like him more. But he could be a huge, mega global superstar.
And he looks the part, right? He looks the part of a heavyweight champion, of someone who you would be afraid of, who is just built, just chiseled, and just looks incredible.
And that is something that Dana and the UFC have been drooling over forever. They thought it was going to be Alistair Overeem, the guy that just looks like an action figure. He walks into a room, no one asks what he does for a living because you know he fights. They had it with Brock. They thought they could have had it with Overeem. Stipe, he's tall, but when you see him, you don't think fighter. You know, he could play baseball. He could play basketball. He came in at, what, 6'4", 230? He could be a linebacker, maybe. But, you know, Ngannou walks into a room, 6'4", 260, and you just go,
Ooh, that's scary.
Yeah, no,
and that's what they want, that action figure of a fighter.
So we're already talking, right? What's next for Francis Ngannou? They were talking about John Jones on the broadcast. Obviously, John Jones has to be next. He should be next. He's been very active on Twitter since right at the end of that fight. He tweeted out, "Show me the money." He said that, "Hey, pay me." He said, "I want the fight." It's crazy to me, though, Eddie, that we are at a point with John Jones. Jones hasn't fought since we watched him fight against Dominic Reyes back in February 2020. He vacated his belt last year. He announced that he was moving up to heavyweight. How do we get to this point where John Jones and Francis Ngannou, now that's the fight to make, that we already haven't negotiated a contract, that we already know that, like, hey, this fight's next. We're not even going to worry about it. John, we took care of you. And I understand that John Jones wants to get paid, and he should be. And we have to get this fight made. And it doesn't actually look great, though, right? John's out there asking for his release on Twitter. He's saying that it's insulting the UFC won't pay him what he feels he's worth. And if you think about, like, based on court documents, Eddie, we know that the UFC pays about 18% of revenue in fighter pay. And so it's not enough. But I'm not here to talk about, like, fighter pay in general. I'm talking specifically the UFC should pay John Jones what they need to pay in order to make this fight happen. You've got to think that, you know, if this fight happens, this is the biggest heavyweight fight that you could make. Now, it's not going to do numbers like Conor versus Khabib. It doesn't. John doesn't do Khabib or Conor numbers. But it could do a million, could do 1.5 million, especially if it's promoted properly, which is exactly what didn't happen on Saturday. Dana White comes in there saying, John Jones should probably think about moving down 185 pounds.
Oh, my God. At this point, we should just stop calling Dana White a promoter, because all he does is denigrate his fighters to try, like, embarrass them and make their pride convince them to take a smaller payday. I mean, if you would just promote your fighters, then you would get a bigger payday via the pay-per-view. Then you wouldn't be so worried about what you're paying them. But, no, he automatically goes the cheap route. I mean, right off the bat, too. Didn't give the fight an hour before he's dissing John Jones and trying to play off maybe Derek Lewis instead. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I don't love that.
No, yeah, either one of them becomes a megastar after this fight, man. There is no losing scenario for the UFC. You know, if Dana just has to invest the money to make it happen. I mean, if you get this fight, you've got two Conor fights by the end of the summer. What kind of year is that for Endeavor? That's bonkers.
Well, and they've already announced that they sold out UFC 261 in minutes, right? And the prices for that were very high. But let's say, like, the UFC does the right thing. How do you see a fight with John Jones going? You know, Francis, obviously, he's the current favorite. They've released odds already for it. How do you think a fight goes with John Jones?
John likes to try and go into his opponents, into their specialty and kind of beat them at their own game. And if they do that, he is going to be taking a dirt nap. You know, I know he's got a chin, but he hasn't been hit with the Ford Escort yet. And by the way, how much advertising is Ford getting out of this?
Yeah,
they don't even have Escorts anymore. If they should just restart the Escort just for this,
forget Toyo tires. Ford Escort needs to be a sponsor of all Francis Ngannou fights. That's my fear, Eddie. You mentioned that if John Jones tries to match firepower with Francis Ngannou, he's not going to be able to. I think you sent me a tweet this last week just showing, like, hey, John Jones needs to do some calf raises, right? You know, he's big on top, but still those skinny legs. My fear is that,
like, an ice cream cone.
A fight with John Jones and Francis Ngannou, John knows how. He's cerebral, right? He's one of the guys that came up the all-around greatest fighter of all time.
He's got the best coaches in the game.
And he's not dumb, right? He knows how to win a fight. He knows how to neutralize. He's going to look at that first fight with Stipe and say, okay, I got to make this fight boring, really. And that's my other fear, is that you can make this fight boring if you're John Jones. Because he's not afraid. He hasn't finished a guy for a while, right? He's okay coming in there and just, you know, taking a decision from Francis. And that's, you know, that's what you kind of have to do. Francis hasn't been finished, right? He's not going to lose a fight. You think he's not going to get knocked out. He's got a chin as well.
Yeah, if John Jones did get a finish, it would be on the ground. You know, his jiu-jitsu is pretty decent. I'm not sure what belt he's up to by now. But Francis has now shown us that he can defend takedowns. We don't know how long he could do it, or, you know, if you're persistent with it like a Damian Maia or someone. You pull a Ben Askren and all you want to do is wrestle him. At some point, John's going to get him down. Now, how long can he keep him there? Remains to be seen.
Yeah, Dana White mentioned that Derek Lewis is the obvious fight to make. Well, that's not the obvious fight to make. They fought, obviously, back in July 2018. Derek Lewis does have a win over Francis Ngannou. I was in the building, and that was not a great fight. Real quick, I just want to mention Stipe. He's going to turn 39 this year. You know, he's considered the GOAT of the UFC heavyweight division, the most title defenses. The UFC has never been a big fan of Stipe, and they don't sound – I don't even think I heard anyone say that Stipe is going to get a rematch. What is next for Stipe Miocic?
Well, he won't do media, and that's his biggest problem. He could be a huge star in the U.S., but he just doesn't want to talk. He's like a giant version of Mighty Mouse, and we saw how the UFC treated him. But he's still got some gas in the tank if he wants to fight, you know. The question is, he's been talking about retirement for like the last 5 years, like long before he had the belt. So I don't know if he wants to or not, and I guess that remains to be seen. He's got a kid on the way too, doesn't he, this summer?
Another one, yeah.
Yeah, so... like they say, it's hard to still have that fight in you when you're waking up in silk sheets.
Well, I mean,
and your kid's waking you up at 3 in the morning.
Think about Stipe, though. He's still at the fire station and still working. I think he worked like a week and a half ago. But yeah, I mean, big news coming out of UFC 260. We have a brand new heavyweight champion. We've got a specimen of a UFC heavyweight champion. Congratulations to Francis Ngannou. Eddie, in the co-main
event. Real quick.
Yeah, go ahead.
What was with the hair, man? That made me think right from the beginning that something wasn't right with Stipe. And the look in his face, like, pretty much through most of the fight. I mean, it wasn't long, obviously, like 6.5 minutes, but it didn't seem like he was completely there in tune Saturday night. Or is it just me?
I mean, you're basing a lot on hair, Eddie. But I mean, someone coming from you who has no hair, I mean, that you're
well,
you're
I'm listening for, to you and looking at you right now.
Reaching for like, straws yeah. there. All right, let's talk about the co-main event. You had Vicente Luque defeat Tyron Woodley via first round KO. Tyron said that he was going to be aggressive in the fight, and he did. He came out aggressive. He landed shots on Vicente Luque, but Vicente landed the stronger shots that really rocked Tyron Woodley, right? Bent him back, buckled his legs, and he was on wobbly street.
Yeah, he was definitely doing the stinky leg.
Yeah.
You know, he had Vicente Luque wobbling for a little bit himself, but he just didn't follow up fast enough. And then Luque got him, like you said, much better. Because he was wobbling for a while. Actually, he had to use the cage to hold himself upright. And then he just couldn't defend that choke.
Oh, my gosh.
Wasn't clear enough to defend it.
Well, I mean, you could tell that choke was deep based on, like, the way that Tyron gasped for air when Vicente Luque released it, right? So, obviously, this is the biggest win of Luque's career. You know, previously he had losses to guys like Leon Edwards, Wonderboy Thompson. Now he's got a win over a former champion.
Bad losses.
What's that?
Not bad losses,
no,
though.
100%, right? He called out Nate Diaz, which I think is a terrible... I think I texted you right after. That's a terrible call. Nate, he said, he's like, I've called you out before, Nate. You didn't say anything. Well, guess what? Nate Diaz is not going to say anything this time either. He's not going to be interested in fighting Vicente Luque. Maybe you put him up against someone like a Michael Chiesa, who is ranked 6th. But the real question is Tyron Woodley, right? What do you do with him? He's lost 4 fights in a row, 16 consecutive rounds he's lost. Hasn't won a round since he defeated Darren Till right here in Texas in September 2018. Finished by Colby with a rib injury. Finished by Luque. You've got to think the UFC would part ways with Tyron. Gosh.
I don't know. His contract's up, so he's a free agent. And I'm pretty certain there's no way in hell Dana White's re-signing him.
Yeah,
he didn't like him in the first place.
Gosh, I would not like
to
see... So
now that he's lost 4 in a row, yeah.
I would not like to see him fight someone in like Bellator or PFL or even ONE.
No, I wouldn't mind PFL. ONE championship, not so much because, you know, they don't really test. Or maybe you could have TRT Tyron. Who knows? But I'd rather see him in, like, the PFL, maybe go for one last big payday with the $1 million tournament. And who knows? Maybe we could get a Woodley versus Pettis. That would be fun.
Super fight there for a PFL version. Sean O'Malley, you mentioned it earlier, went for a walk-off KO. He said, look, I only have 15 minutes. You know, I only fight once or twice a year, and I have 15 minutes, so I've got to make him look pretty. He went for a walk-off KO, didn't finish the fight. The ref did not come in and stop the fight, and that almost was a problem, right? Almeida actually looked better, looked stronger. After that, on one scorecard, he won the second round, but he finished him in the third, landed another kind of walk-off strike, and then he had to come back and finish him up on the ground and just dropped a bomb on him.
Yeah, Thomas Almeida is almost too tough for his own good. You know, the way he came back after the first knockdown was pretty impressive. You know, I was wondering if he'd even remember the rest of the fight. But then after the second one in the third round, you know, he gets knocked down, but he's kind of rolling around. And O'Malley says, not again. And he kind of pulls a Drago on him. Like, if he dies, he dies. And he just, like, dives in for the last shot. And it was clean, too.
Yeah, you think about what do you do next with O'Malley? You know, he still isn't ranked. Prior to, you know, a couple days after this fight, not yet at least, Marlon Vera, who defeated, not in O'Malley's mind, but who defeated him back at UFC 252, was ranked 15th. Cody Stamann seemed to mock O'Malley after the fight, but he's matched up with Merab Dvalishvili. Maybe a Dominic Cruz fight would be out there for Sean O'Malley.
I've heard that mentioned, and while it's definitely intriguing, I'm like, that's a big jump up, man, to go from guys who aren't ranked to the probably the greatest bantamweight ever.
Yeah. But I mean, you just had, you know, who was it? Casey Kenney fought, and he lost that fight, right, to Dominic Cruz. But, you know, he's another guy that was at the, you know, a big step up in competition, and Dom did not finish that guy either, so.
But, I mean, that would put O'Malley right where we kind of feel he should be, closer to the top 10.
Yeah. Just real quick, we got another Von Flew choke. Alonzo Menafield choked out Fabio Charrant. The fourth Von Flew choke in UFC history. Miranda Maverick defeated Jillian Robertson in her second fight in the UFC. Robertson ranked 15th.
She's very interesting, man.
Maverick's now on a 5-fight win streak. She called out Antonina Shevchenko.
Yeah, she reminds me of like a mini version of PFL's Kayla Harrison. You know, she's pretty stocky. She's got nice big shoulders. They also mentioned she's like a teaching assistant in Old Dominion. She's going for a PhD. And like, she was grading papers during fight week while she was cutting weight.
I like her.
I feel sorry for those students.
Yeah.
You don't want your TA cutting weight while grading papers.
Yeah. Khabib Nurmagomedov was in the building for his cousin, Abubakar Nurmagomedov. He had a decision victory over Jared Gordon. He looked good, right? I liked him.
Yeah. He had much better striking than you usually expect from these wrestlers out of Dagestan.
So that's UFC 260, guys. You're listening to Fight Night on 104.9 The Horn, hornfm.com, and we will be right back.
It's What's Up With That.
Woke up this morning and I got out of bed. Had a big old cup of coffee to clear my head. Been home for a while and that's where I'm at. But we can still jam on What's Up With That. Ooh-wee. What's up with that? What's up with that? Ooh-wee. What's up with that? What's up with that? What's up? Without you, yeah. Oh, oh. Woo! Well.
All right, Eddie, we gotta cut that short, right? Because we are short on time.
How dare you?
I know. I love Keenan. And SNL was back this weekend. And so, you know, it's always great to see that. But guys, you're listening to Fight Night on 104.9 The Horn, hornfm.com. Eddie, did you see Beyonce on Hot Ones?
Dude, that was amazing. I'm a big fan of Hot Ones. You're a fan of Hot Ones, too, aren't you?
I do like Hot Ones.
Yeah, so seeing Sean Evans probably had the time of his life seeing himself be parodied SNL. And then Kamala Harris's husband being played by Martin Short. He can die now, right? It's not going to get any better than this.
Boomers Got the Vax was good, I thought.
Oh, my God. That was hilarious.
You're a boomer, right?
Gen X, baby. All the way. Damn millennials. Now listen here. The UFC is close to booking Conor versus Dustin 3. What's up with that?
All right. So right now, Eddie, the plan is for July 10th, UFC 264. It sounds like all three parties, UFC, Dustin, Conor, are close to finalizing a deal, and it could be announced as early as this week. Now, Dana actually said that they offered Poirier the title fight, right? And he turned it down, wanting to fight Conor. He actually went on to say, yeah, this was the right decision, that we've seen other guys take the wrong decision and not fight Conor. Now, did Dana just admit that it's more advantageous to fight Conor than to fight for an actual belt in the UFC?
If you were to ask him that question directly, he would say, no, that's not what I said. But yes.
Yeah, I agree. He did say that Justin Gaethje could be on that same card, maybe a backup or a co-main.
Let's hope. Let's hope we don't need the backup, too. Now, Miesha Tate is making her return to the Octagon, Jordan. What is up with that?
Yeah, 5 years after being away from the sport, Miesha Tate announced that she's coming back to fight in July. She's going to fight Marion Renault July 17th. She retired back in 2016. And Miesha, since then, I think she's had two children. She was a vice president of ONE Championship and moved to Singapore. She had to move back, though, during the pandemic. And so she's been out back. She's been training at Extreme Couture. Sounds like this will be the final fight on Marion Renault's contract. Tate says she's coming back for blood. She wants to win a championship here. I don't know if that's going to happen. Amanda Nunes, we saw what happened last time they fought, but we'll see.
If she does, that's definitely some movie-worthy stuff. You know, I'm sure ONE Championship would have loved for Misha's first fight back to have been with them so they could put her on TNT. But I think she got like 5 or 6 fights left on her UFC contract, so that's a no-go, Jordan. Now, Triller, those guys from Triller held a press conference in Las Vegas for the Jake Paul-Ben Askren fight. Coming up in a few weeks, what's up with that? I'm ashamed of myself.
So exactly what you would expect, right, from a Jake Paul press conference, going back and forth with Ben Askren, though. At one point, they did get it in each other's faces. Ben Askren pushed him away by really just kind of shoving his face. I don't know if you saw that video. I thought that was
kind of a
good
pie face, yeah.
Paul shoved Askren right back in the back, pushed him away. Also on the car, or on the at the press conference, Oscar De La Hoya showed up, right? And he said that he plans on boxing
Snoop Dogg
and making a return, one of my former neighbors. And he's going to do it with Triller in July. Expected, Eddie, that's going to happen in Dallas, right? So maybe Triller could be, we could go out there and watch a Triller event.
With him being your former neighbor, being in Dallas, get us the hookup, buddy.
Ooh, I don't
but
know.
You know what I'm betting? He said that he wants someone from UFC in this one. And we were talking previously about Anderson Silva making a comeback boxing. Synergy. I see it happening. Ooh. And I think De La Hoya is a lot closer to Anderson's fighting weight these days. He looked a little chunky in the face, you know what I mean?
Well, Anthony Pettis' management team said that they spoke with De La Hoya and they offered him to box De La Hoya, and De La Hoya has declined. One other thing about
this. Just want someone still active.
Yeah, one other thing about the Triller fight. So the Georgia Athletic Commission has declined to offer Antonio Tarver a license to box Frank Mir. Mir will now face the former IBF cruiserweight champion, Steve Cunningham. Cunningham last fought in 2017, Eddie. Just a few new fights. You got Alex Oliveira versus Randy Brown. That's UFC 261. Jacare Souza versus Andre Muniz. Lauren Murphy fighting Jojo Calderwood. Omari Akhmedov fighting Brad Tavares. Jennifer Maya fighting Jessica Ai. And Misha Tate, we mentioned, fighting Marion Renault. Over in Bellator, you got Patrick Ferreira fighting Peter Coeli. Guys, come back. We are going to talk right now to Josh Thompson. He's going to help us preview Bellator 255. You got the other pit bull, Patricio Ferreira, defending the featherweight title against Emmanuel Sanchez. Usman Nurmagomedov also on the card. So, guys, you're listening to Fight Night on 104.9 The Horn, hornfm.com, and we will be right back.
Until next time, hey. What's up with that?
This is future UFC heavyweight champion Derek the Black Beast Lewis, and you're listening to Fight Night with Eddie and Jordan on The Horn.
All right, welcome back to Fight Night on 104.9 The Horn, hornfm.com. Joining us now on the Vaqueros Cafe and Cantina Hotline, we're going to talk a little Bellator, and the Bellator's debut on Showtime is former Strikeforce lightweight champion Josh Thompson. Josh, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
Hey, I'm excited to talk to you. Bellator is back, first fight of 2021, and also making its Showtime debut. And this is going to be the first fight on Showtime really since January 2013, back when Strikeforce did it. Josh, you are no stranger to fighting on Strikeforce. Tell me, what does it mean to have MMA back on this network?
You know, I think it's a good platform for people and the fighters to realize that now we have a home. And so I think for the longest time, people, you know, it was Spike TV, and then it was Paramount, and then it was, you know, DAZN, and then it went, you know, like we kind of were a drifting platform of fights. And so what happened is when this whole thing finally came to fruition, and it gave the fighters an opportunity to say, hey, this is where I'm fighting. You can catch me, you know, on Friday nights here. Then it makes it a lot easier for fighters to market themselves. It makes it a lot easier for the promotion and the people that work for the promotion to say, hey, anytime you're at home, you know, on a Friday night, just, hey, we're going to be there. And that kind of is the idea of which, you know, getting us back on that network is all about. And so I'm happy to say that I was part of the Showtime family from before, you know, as a fighter. Then now I'm on the other side of the camera and the mic, you know, talking about all the talented fighters that we have now. And we've got, I think, honestly, a way better roster than what we had for Strikeforce on the Bellator roster. And so when I'm having these conversations with people and talking about the talent that we have on our Bellator roster, look what went into another organization in Strikeforce. It all became champions. And I continue to say that this roster that we have is just so much better than the roster that Strikeforce had when they were on Showtime. So I think Showtime's amped and pumped at the fact that they've got such talented athletes and fighters and, from all walks of life. So I'm excited for this to happen.
Yeah, no, I definitely want to talk about that because there's still a lot of fighters back from the Strikeforce days that are still competing at a high level right now. But let's talk about this event on Friday night. Bellator is in the main event. It's a great main event, right? You've got the semifinals of the Featherweight Grand Prix. You've got the champion, Patricio Pitbull Fedede versus Emmanuel Sanchez. What do you think? Tell me about this matchup. I mean, obviously, you know, Pitbull, one of the greatest fighters probably in Bellator history, going up against the Duke Rufus trained Emmanuel Sanchez.
Yeah, I would say it's Patricio Pitbull and Douglas Lima are probably the two greatest in Bellator history. Those are the two greatest athletes probably to ever fight in the cage there. In terms of what can I say for the fight between the two of them, I mean, Patricio's got the power. I think he's also got the wrestling, and his grappling is phenomenal. I've had firsthand experience with training with him and grappling with him, and he's physically strong. It's like trying to move around a steel pipe somewhere. You just can't move it. He's a phenomenal athlete all the way around. I think what makes it difficult for people to fight him is that he's shorter in stature, but he's got power. So anytime you try to get closer, anytime you try to think you can take him down, you can't take him down because he's got such a good base. He's just physically strong, extremely strong. And so I think now that he's coming to his own, he's so relaxed. He's so composed. He understands that they're going to have to come to him. If you want to be the champ, you got to beat the champ kind of mentality is what he's developed over these last couple of years. He's matured so much as a fighter that he understands that these fighters need to come get his belt if they want it. You know, it just so happens that he's stepping across the cage from someone he's already fought, but he's that guy that's like, hey, I'm going to come get the belt. And I've said this over and over again. Emmanuel Sanchez has never lost a fight in his life. He just ran out of time. And that's kind of exactly where he is. He's a guy that his conditioning, his cardio, his pace, all of those things make him probably one of the most dangerous fighters, you know, in all of Bellator history. He just comes forward. He just puts a pace on you. You just can't control. And, you know, and old sayings like, you know, fatigue makes cowards out of all of us. There's some truth behind that because people are not the same people when they get tired. And Emmanuel Sanchez takes those people to those breaking points and tries to break them. He wasn't quite able to do it with Patricio in their first fight, and it was a barn burner of a fight. He just ran out of time. And I guess I can say that this is probably round six for them to go into, and Emmanuel Sanchez is going to pick up right where he left off when it comes to this fight coming up.
Yeah, no, I totally agree, and I'm looking forward to watching them fight. And Pitbull's the double champ, right? He defeated Michael Chandler back in 2019 to win the lightweight championship as well. But what's been interesting to me, and you guys did this in the welterweight Grand Prix as well, but you have the champion defend their belt, you know, every step of the way, right? So it's a five-round fight. They've got to defend their belt. What kind of extra pressure does that put on the champion knowing, hey, I'm the only guy here that you know, in some cases, fighting five rounds and able to you know, and able to have those, you know, that mental psyche to go into those fights.
Well, I mean, like for Patricio, he's been fighting five rounds almost all of his career. So it doesn't really change anything for him. You know, he just looks at all these guys. He's got to go in there and beat them anyway. It wouldn't matter. I think it's actually better for the champion to be involved in these tournaments because now they're not sitting on the side watching these guys and watching the hype get up. And they're sitting on the sidelines, not really training as hard as they should be or not getting ready for a fight. And they're not as active as they should have been. You know, and so I think it's best for them to be involved in this. And not only that, why would you want to exclude your champion from having a chance of winning $1 million on top of what they're already making? I mean, these guys will be walking away with well into seven figures if they win the tournament. You know, and it's like, why would you want to exclude your champion, who is the one that's kind of the pillar and the backbone of your organization as well as that weight division? And so I think it's great to have the champions always involved. As far as Patricio goes, he's phenomenal, man. Everything about him, the power, the explosiveness, his wrestling's gotten so much better since he started working with Henry Cejudo and their training partners. They have, you know, they've got mutual friends. They work together all the time, and you can just see the confidence when it comes to the wrestling. And a lot of Henry Cejudo's success also came from him working with Patricio. And so it's nice to see that both of them are capitalizing on their gains of working with each other. So I think this fight, honestly, is a big deal because it is a champ, and like he is the champ. So there is a little bit more pressure on him to defend because If he loses the title at 45, you know, he's gonna have to go. He's gonna have to go up to 55 and defend his title there. But there's a lot of talk that if he does get past Emmanuel Sanchez, that, you know, that AJ McKee is talking about, look, if I beat you here, I'm going to go up to 55 and beat you there. And so there's a little bit of storyline going on behind the scenes, you know, between AJ McKee and Patricio Pitbull. So, but Emmanuel Sanchez is not to be overlooked.
Yeah, no, and you mentioned AJ McKee. That's who the winner faces in the mm-hmm. in the finals, right, of the Featherweight Grand Prix. McKee submitted Darren Caldwell back at what he called it the McKee and T. That was pretty impressive back in November. Either way, you know, whoever wins on Friday is going to have a great matchup. Guys, you're listening to Fight Night on 104.9 The Horn, and we have Strikeforce World Champion and Bellator analyst Josh Thompson. You know, I want to talk about the rest of the fight. So Bellator is not coming back just this week. They're going three Fridays in a row. Mm-hmm. And they've announced the light heavyweight World Grand Prix. You got people like Ryan Bader, Lyoto Machida, Corey Anderson. You got the champion Vadim Nemkov. He's fighting Phil Davis. And we're going to see the Bellator debut of former UFC title contenders Anthony Rumble Johnson and Yoel Romero. What are the matchups that you're looking forward to the most?
You know, I'm looking to see Nemkov and Phil Davis because, you know, they've already fought. And Phil Davis, in their first fight, was starting to come on towards the end of the third round, and Nemkov started to slow. So I want to see if Phil Davis in a five-round fight can get the job done. Nemkov, though, coming off of a huge knockout win over Ryan Bader, the former champion, to win the title, is also somebody that he is now kind of coming to his own. And how will he defend the title? Like, you have to remember, it's not just about getting to the title and about winning the title. It's about keeping the title. It's harder to defend it than it is to win it. And that's what a lot of people won't understand it because a lot of people have never been champion. And so when it comes down to it, like, he's got to defend this title against someone he's already fought. Sure, he's already beaten. But it's a matter of whether he can do it or not. That's the fight that I'm looking forward to because Nemkov against Ryan Bader, he absolutely destroyed Ryan Bader in every aspect of that fight. And I want to know if he can continue to keep it going on, you know, and Phil Davis is very similar to Ryan Bader in a lot of ways, but Phil Davis has come up short on two occasions and fighting him. And so Nemkov, you would think on paper has the advantage, but when it comes down to it, if you go back and watch their first fight, Phil Davis started to come and put it on him in the third round. So that's the fight that interests me a lot. Now, don't get me wrong. Everybody, and I mean everybody, is always looking forward to watching Anthony Rumble Johnson fight. You know, so Anthony Rumble Johnson is just somebody who's just got power. He's fun to watch. He's fast twitch. I've known AJ since he first started fighting, you know, in the UFC before that, you know, and he's a great person, you know, and love watching the energy in which he fights. So that's another fight with him and Yoel Romero that I'm looking forward to. And Yoel's just, I mean, 44 years old and looks like that. He's built like a Greek god and, you know, Olympic silver medalist. I mean, what are you going to say? What are you going to do? Like, you're thinking like, man, are you sure you're not 32? Those are the things that I think is on everybody's mind. But that fight is going to be fireworks, and I'm glad that fight's in the first round of the matchups.
Yeah, and that's happening on May 7th. And I'm looking forward, obviously, yes, to the main event on that fight card. You've got Bellator Bantamweight Championship Juan Archuleta fighting Sergio Pettis. I always love to see how Aaron Pico's developing. Who else should we be thinking about? Who are some other fights or fighters that are you looking forward to seeing in the Bellator cage in this next month or so?
All right, so, well, I mean, like, for me, it's Magomedov. He's the guy that, to me, I feel like in the 135-pound division is going to just capture, I think, the whole division by surprise. You've got a lot of top guys that are in there with Patchy Mix, James Gallagher, you know, Pettis, you know, Juan Archuleta. You've got a stacked division. But Magomedov is the only guy to hold a victory over Petr Yan. I mean, now outside of Aljamain Sterling, sure, who's gifted a title, you know, kind of situation. But I would say in a legit, you know, five-round war that Magomedov was able to beat him. And so he's probably the guy that I would say is the most intriguing, the most interesting because of what he brings. He brings that wrestling pedigree, that Dagestani-style wrestling, and he's relentless. He's going to keep coming with it until he gets it. And so he's going to pose a problem for a lot of guys. But the one thing that we can say is there's guys that we have. You know, you've got Patchy Mix, who's just phenomenal on the ground. You know, you've got James Gallagher, who's phenomenal on the ground. Most of his wins come by submission. So when you're talking about the remedy for someone like Magomedov, it would be one of those two guys. But those two guys now are fighting as well coming up. So it's all fun. Those are the guys that I'm looking for. But then there's another one, one of our females, Alejandra Lara. She's also got a fight coming up against Kana Katari. And so as soon as that happens, I want to see exactly how much she's improved over the last year of, you know, not being active, but she was doing so well before that. She had fought, I want to say, in 2019 December against Vita Ortega, and she had a phenomenal display. She just destroyed Vita in a great fight, and so she's gotten so much better as well. So that should be a very good fight.
Yeah, no, I love what Bellator is doing right now, right? They've got the right amount of like of homegrown talent that they're building up, and they're signing from wrestling and from other places like that. And they're also bringing in the right veterans, right, that can help round out divisions. And so, and you look at like the light heavyweight division, you could have the best, you know, light heavyweight division out there right now. You have and with the best fighters out there. So, hey, I have to ask, it was announced that former Bellator lightweight champion Michael Chandler is going to fight Charles Oliveira right here in Texas next month or in May, actually. How do you see that fight going for Chandler?
You know, I honestly believe it's a tailor-made fight for him. I don't see any way that Charles Oliveira beats him. I don't think he submits him. I don't think he can take him down. The one thing that he could do is he could potentially drag the fight into deep waters and see if he can get him to fatigue. But the one thing that Chandler has done very well over the last two or three fights is he's learned how to control his aggression and his energy so he doesn't get tired and get exhausted. You know, and we've seen that in past fights where he's so tired, he barely gets through the fourth and the fifth round. But we've seen him also make those improvements, and he's always talked about making those improvements. He's got the power over Charles Oliveira. He's got the wrestling over Charles Oliveira. He's got the speed over Charles Oliveira. So outside, I think I would give the submission advantage to Charles Oliveira. But how does he plan to get to Michael Chandler's back? How does he plan to get to Michael Chandler down? That's the other thing, you know. So Chandler, to me, you're looking at a former Bellator fighter, a former Bellator champion, and I would look to say that he's probably going to be in the UFC champion here shortly.
I could see that as well. Hey, last question for me. You look at former Strikeforce fighters that are still out there finding success. You mentioned it earlier. You got like guys like Jorge Masvidal now, Luke Rockhold, Gegard Mousasi, Jacare. You know, you got Misha Tate coming back. Tyron Woodley still fought this weekend. Do you ever get that itch? Do you ever want to make that comeback and get back in the Bellator cage?
Absolutely not. There's no chance. There's not a chance in heck that I'm coming back. No chance. You want to give me one of the Paul brothers to beat up on, I would do that, but that's about it.
There you go. That would be a fun fight. I would like to see that. So guys, as part of the Bellator launch on Showtime, you guys can check them out for a 30-day free trial, followed up by a 6 months at $4.99 a month. Go to show.com/BellatorMMA. You can check out Josh on the at the Real Punk on Twitter and check out his podcast with a good friend of our show, Big John McCarthy, the Weighing In podcast. Say what's up to Luke Thomas and Brian Campbell this week when you see him. And Josh, thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me on, guys. I appreciate it.
Big thanks to former Strikeforce champion and current Bellator analyst Josh Thompson breaking down UFC or Bellator 255. I'm not sure. Apologize for the audio. I'm not sure what happened there. It sounds like he was breaking up just a little bit. Also on the fight card, Eddie, you've got another cousin of Khabib, Usman Nurmagomedov, who says he's actually supposed to be better. He's a much better striker than Abu Bakr and Khabib. He's making his Bellator debut.
These guys are taking over.
13-0, and obviously this is a big fight for him in the co-main event. You've got Matt Mitrione out of his fight against Tyrell Fortune. Who's Fortune fighting?
He is fighting Jack May, looks like, in a rematch of their September Bellator 245 no contest.
All right. I believe. And
I think Jack May took a low blow.
Hey, did you see that that Roger Huerta is going to be fighting on the prelims?
Yeah, Austin's legend. First UFC fighter on Sports Illustrated, wasn't he?
I believe he was. So not sure if you can watch the prelims anywhere, Eddie, but hopefully we will see those somewhere.
Let's hope, because that's good. Like I always say, watch the prelims, because also got two Magomedov fighting at bantamweight. Yeah. So scary nice. Name.
All right. Hey, Patty Pimblett, who was a hot prospect over in Cage Warriors, signed with the UFC this week, guys. Thanks so much for listening. Check out Stu and Justin, Sports Guys, Talking Wrestling next. And check us out at Fight Night ATX on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram.
Stay safe. Get vaccinated. Stay positive. Love your life. And if we ever didn't thank you, let us do it now.
Happy trails to you till we meet again.